It is just a little bit afternoon here on June 30th, Saturday. This is WFT Champaign, 90.1 FM, and this is the world we live in, and I'm going to be your host, Ben Theobald. And today, this week was quite eventful in terms of news, as you probably heard, today, demonstrators are gathering in cities across the country to protest the administration's immigration policies. I believe it's the term, or you might have been hearing, stop the separation of families. And last week, I had somebody with the ACLU with me talking about this day. This was kind of a planned event, and I believe last week there was a protest at the Champaign Hotel against ICE, and as you probably heard, we've been talking about this past hour, there was going to be a protest at, I believe it's the Champaign Library at 1 p.m. Just one of many protests. That's a part of this whole national kind of movement of demonstrators across the country, and I believe that's at 1 p.m. and I believe that's at the Champaign Urbana Library. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about primaries. I know Illinois already had its primary quite a while ago in March, but in Maryland, for the Maryland Democratic primary for governor, the former NAACP chief Ben Jealous won the Democratic primary for governor. He's considered a progressive candidate. He's for legalizing public college tuition and legalizing things like marijuana and raising the state's minimum wage to $15 an hour. And yeah, that was Ben Jealous who, and if he were to win the governor election, that governor election in come November, in November, he would be Maryland's first African-American governor. And this is just the second time that Maryland has nominated a black man for the job, or an African American for governor. And in Colorado, another kind of historic history was made. The Colorado's governor, Democrat, and again, this was the Democratic primary, Jared Polis won the Democratic primary, and he will go against Republican Walker Stapleton in November. And let's see, Polis, who is a five-term congressman, I believe in the area of Boulder, Colorado, he would be the nation's, if he wins in November, he would be the nation's first openly gay man to be elected a governor. And his win is supposed to represent, is being considered a very sharp turn for Democrats to the left, and that's Stapleton, the Republican, I believe, is a Bush family relative, and he would be the only second Republican elected governor in Colorado in 44 years. So it's a very interesting race. And of course, you may have heard about this race. It got a lot of media attention in New York's 14th congressional district race. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez defeated incumbent Representative Joe Crowley, and it was not even close. It was 15 points or so. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is a 20-year-old. She considers herself a democratic socialist, and she's supposed to be a very progressive platform that includes Medicare for all and a federal jobs guarantee. If she were to win in November, I believe she would be the youngest person ever to serve in Congress, as she's only 28. And she is of Puerto Rican descent, I believe. And yeah, she volunteered or worked for the Senator Bernie Sanders when he was running for president. She was a volunteer for his campaign. And I believe she also worked for the late Ted Kennedy, I believe she was a part of it, worked for part of it, is worked for him. And let's see. On Wednesday, Anthony Kennedy announced that he would be retiring from the Supreme Court after July 31st, which means there will be an open Supreme Court justice that the current president says that he plans on filling President Trump. I believe the Senator Mitch McConnell, the head of the Senate, said that they would plan on voting for a nominee to replace Justice Anthony Kennedy. They plan on replacing Anthony Kennedy in the fall. And so there's speculation on who would replace him. Anthony Kennedy played pivotal parts. He authored several important cases, such as Bomadine versus Bush and Citizens United. And his opinions on courts landmark for gay rights in cases such as Romer versus Evans, Lawrence versus Texas, and United States versus Windsor. And there's speculation on what this means for abortion rights in Roe v. Wade. And I wanted to play video on kind of history on Roe v. Wade. This was, I believe, the actual decision. So this is this was before Anthony Kennedy was on the Supreme Court. This was the decision that was made on, it was 1973 when Roe v. Wade was approved by, voted in favor, which means women granting abortion rights, making abortion legal.
From CBS News headquarters in New York, this is the CBS Evening News with Walter Cronkite and Eric Severide in New York, George Herman in Washington, Leslie Stahl in Washington, Fred P. Graham in Atlanta, Peter Kalischer in Paris, Tom Fenton in Paris, Robert Shackney in Des Moines, and tonight, a CBS Evening News special report, The Energy Crisis.
Good evening. In a landmark ruling, the Supreme Court today legalized abortions. The majority in cases from Texas and Georgia said that the decision to end a pregnancy during the first 3 months belongs to the woman and her doctor, not the government. Thus, the anti-abortion laws of 46 states were rendered unconstitutional. More on this story from George Herman.
In two related cases and eight separate opinions, the nine justices made abortion largely a private matter and ordered the states to make no laws forbidding it, except possibly during the final months. The court split 7-2, with Justices Byron White and William Rehnquist dissenting. In effect, the court makes abortion subject only to the decision of the pregnant woman's doctor. It ruled that states may make no laws restricting a doctor's right to decide his patient needs an abortion and to carry out that abortion during the first 3 months of a pregnancy. After that comparatively safe 3 month period, abortions may be regulated, but not prohibited by state law and for the benefit of the mother's health alone. Abortion is somewhat more dangerous at this stage, and states may insist, for example, that they be performed in regulated hospitals. Only in the final stages of pregnancy may states intervene and say no to abortion. The court's decision, written by Justice Blackmun, thus sets limits on the right to abortion on demand. One limit is the time when doctors believe the fetus may be able to survive outside the mother's womb. At that point, usually in the seventh month of pregnancy, the state may take legal action to protect the unborn child, even forbidding abortion, except to protect the mother. The newly liberalized abortion law brought immediate reaction.
I think that to raise the dignity of woman and give her freedom of choice in this area is an extraordinary event. And I think that January 22nd, 1973 would be an historic day.
In this instance, the Supreme Court has withdrawn protection for the human rights of unborn children, and it is teaching people that abortion is a rather innocuous procedure provided that there are proper legal safeguards. I think that the judgment of the court will do a great deal to tear down the respect previously accorded human life in our culture.
One of today's plaintiffs was an anonymous former mental patient identified only as Mary Doe, 22 years old. CBS News correspondent Fred Graham talked with her recently.
Now, the first two children you'd had they been taken away from you?
Yes, because I couldn't take care of them by myself, and I couldn't with my husband.
And now that you had one more, and it was also put out for adoption, wasn't it?
Yes, I put it out because of my husband.
Now, after you were unable to get the abortion for the fourth pregnancy, what happened?
Well, I had to go on and have the baby and have it adopted out.
New York State, among others, already have liberalized abortions. Now the rest of the country must follow suit. The White House offered no comment, but President Nixon has always strongly opposed liberalized abortion. Other opponents are now talking of a constitutional amendment to reverse today's ruling. Until then, if the experience of New York State is any guide, America will eventually have one abortion for every two births. George Herman, CBS News, Washington.
There was, of course, other reaction. Cardinal Cook, the Catholic Archbishop of New York, called the decision a shocking action, and Cardinal Kroll of Philadelphia termed it an unspeakable tragedy. The High Court also agreed today to resolve another major constitutional question, government aid to parochial and private schools.
Today also, or not, excuse me, not today, I believe it was, let's see if I can bring up on my, yeah, let's see, let me, I have it written down, It's President, this was in 1965. I'm just trying to find the exact date. It was July 2nd. So this Monday marks the anniversary of President Johnson, Lyndon Johnson signing the Civil Rights Act and Voting Rights Act into law, and this is both a video of him signing the act and him talking about it. I'll see if I can just skip a little, find the exact here.
Before an audience of legislators and civil rights leaders who had labored long and hard for passage of the bill, President Johnson calls for all Americans to back what he calls a turning point in history.
We must not approach the observance and enforcement of this law in a vengeful spirit. Its purpose is not to punish. Its purpose is not to divide, but to end divisions. Divisions which have lasted all too long. Its purpose is national, not regional. This Civil Rights Act is a challenge to all of us to go to work in our communities and our states, in our homes and in our hearts, to eliminate the last vestiges of injustice in our beloved country. So, tonight I urge every public official, every religious leader, every business and professional man, every working man, every housewife, I urge every American to join in this effort to bring justice and hope to all our people and to bring peace to our land.
There's warm applause from members of both parties as the president sets to work. It is work. He uses nearly 100 pens to affix his signature and date. Souvenirs go to Republican leader Everett Dirksen and Democratic whip Hubert Humphrey. The president seems to have mastered the art of just touching each pen to the paper. Integration leader Martin Luther King receives his pen, a gift he said he would cherish. The Department of Justice will enforce the law if necessary. And G-Man Chief J. Edgar Hoover is present. Another group of pens is reserved for the Kennedys, and the Attorney General is entrusted with a half dozen. Now, in this summer of 1964, the Civil Rights Bill is the law of the land. In the words of the President, it restricts no one's freedom so long as he respects the rights of others.
And let me just say thank you to, I believe that was the YouTube channel Max Power for having that video up and available for me to play on the show. Let's see, I had a little bit more, and there was another speech. Hopefully this isn't. This is from Mick American President's YouTube channel for a video. So, and I believe he goes, President Johnson, again, more remarks on the Civil Rights Bill. It's a little bit longer than the previous one, so I'll just play that celebrate this anniversary. July 2nd's anniversary.
To talk to you about what that law means to every American. 188 years ago this week, a small band of valiant men began a long struggle for freedom. They pledged their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor, not only to found a nation, but to forge an ideal of freedom. Not only for political independence, but for personal liberty. Not only to eliminate foreign rule, but to establish the rule of justice in the affairs of men. That struggle was a turning point in our history. Today, in far corners of distant continents, the ideals of those American patriots still shape the struggles of men who hunger for freedom. This is a proud triumph. Yet those who founded our country knew that freedom would be secure only if each generation fought to renew and enlarge its meaning. From the Minutemen at Concord to the soldiers in Vietnam, each generation has been equal to that trust. Americans of every race and color have died in battle to protect our freedom. Americans of every race and color have worked to build a nation of widening opportunities. Now, our generation of Americans has been called on to continue the unending search for justice within our own borders. We believe that all men are created equal, yet many are denied equal treatment. We believe that all men have certain unalienable rights, yet many Americans do not enjoy those rights. We believe that all men are entitled to the blessings of liberty, yet millions are being deprived of those blessings, not because of their own failures, but because of the color of their skin. The reasons are deeply embedded in history and tradition and the nature of man. We can understand without rancor or hatred how this all happened. But it cannot continue. Our Constitution, the foundation of our republic, forbids it. The principles of our freedom forbid it. Morality forbids it. And the law I will sign tonight forbids it. That law is the product of months of the most careful debate and discussion. It was proposed more than 1 year ago by our late and beloved President, John F. Kennedy. It received the bipartisan support of more than two-thirds of the members of both the House and the Senate. An overwhelming majority of Republicans, as well as Democrats, voted for it. It has received the thoughtful support of tens of thousands of civic and religious leaders in all parts of this nation. And it is supported by the great majority of the American people.
And again, just want to make give, and again, thanks to the YouTube channel, Mick American President, for having that audio video available, and for the video or audio that I played about the Roe versus Wade decision with that was Walter Cronkite. It was actually that was from the CBS 1973 CBS Evening News with Walter Cronkite. That was American Throwback YouTube channel that had that audio available. So thank you to them. This I believe July. I want to say it's either July 1st. So tomorrow. July 1st, 1932 was when Franklin Delano Roosevelt was nominated for president at the Democratic Convention, and this is some the audio. This is from the FDR library, so thank you to them for having this available. And this is from the 1932 Democratic National Convention.
Convention with 700 votes in his favor, I take it as indicative of the public sentiment of the country for that candidate. He's entitled to the nomination. Chair is now prepared to announce the result of the poll. I proclaim him the nominee of this convention for President of the United States. Recognizes the Honorable Bruce Campbell, a delegate from the state of Illinois.
I now avail myself enthusiastically and happily, not only personally, but on behalf of the Democratic State of Illinois, to second the nomination for the office of Vice President of Honorable John N. Turner of Texas. I thank you.
It is my pleasing duty as the chairman of this National Democratic Convention and its committee specially designated for that purpose formally to notify you of your nomination by on yesterday for the office of President of the United States.
Chairman Walsh, my friends of the Democratic National Convention of 1932, I appreciate your willingness after these six arduous days to remain here, for I know well the sleepless hours which you and I have had. I have started out on the tasks that lie ahead by breaking the absurd tradition that the candidate should remain in professed ignorance of what has happened for weeks until he is formally notified of that event many weeks later. You have nominated me. And I know it. And I am here to thank you for the honor. Let it also be symbolic that in so doing, I broke traditions. Let it be from now on the task of our party to break foolish traditions. We will break foolish traditions and leave it to the Republican leadership, far more skilled in that art, to break promises. This convention wants repeal. Your candidate wants repeal. And I am confident that the United States of America wants repeal. I say to you now that from this date on, the 18th Amendment is doomed. I pledge myself to a new deal for the American people. Give me your help. Not to win votes alone, but to win in this crusade to restore America to its own people.
And again, thank you to FTR, the YouTube channel FTR Library, for that video of the Democratic National Convention in 1932, when of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who was the governor of New York at the time, then became the Democratic candidate for in that election. We're going to be kind of jumping forward now in terms of this kind of history. It's a history look back that I guess I'm kind of doing. June 27th, so this was this past Wednesday marked the anniversary of North Korean troops reaching Seoul, and the United Nations asked members to aid South Korea, and then President Harry Truman ordered the United States Air Force and Navy into the Korean conflict, and I believe I have some audio of that, if I can find. I had it available. If I can. Let's see.
Mr. President, Mr. Secretary General, the people of the United Nations, 5 years ago today, the Charter of the United Nations came into force. By virtue of that event, October 24th, 1945, became a great day in the history of the world. Life out of their hopes for peace and justice. The United Nations represents the idea of universal morality, superior to the interests of individual nations. Its foundation does not rest upon power or privilege. It rests upon faith. They rest upon the faith of men in human values, upon the belief that men in every land hold the same high ideals and strive toward the same goals for peace and justice. This faith is deeply held by the people of the United States of America, and I believe by the peoples of all other countries. Governments may sometimes falter in their support of the United Nations, but the peoples of the world do not falter. The demand of men and women throughout the world for international order and justice is one of the strongest forces in these troubled times. We've just had a vivid demonstration of that fact in Korea. The invasion of the Republic of Korea was a direct challenge to the principles of the United Nations. That challenge was met by an overwhelming response. The peoples of almost every member country supported the decision of the Security Council to meet this aggression with force. Few acts in our time have met with such widespread approval. In uniting to crush the aggressors in Korea, these member nations have done no more than the Charter calls for. But the important thing is that they have done it, and they have done it successfully. They have given dramatic evidence that the Charter works. They have proved that the Charter is a living instrument, backed by the material and moral strength of members large and small. The men who laid down their lives for the United Nations in Korea will have a place in our memory and in the memory of the world forever. They died in order that the United Nations might live. As a result of their sacrifices, the United Nations today is stronger than it ever has been. Today it is better able than ever before to fill the hopes that men have placed in it. I believe the people of the world rely on the United Nations to help them achieve two great purposes. They look to it to help them improve the conditions under which they live. And they rely on it to fulfill their profound longing for peace. United Nations, a just and lasting peace. The present time, the fear of another great international war overshadows all the hopes of mankind. This fear arises from the tensions between nations and from the recent outbreak of open aggression in Korea. We in the United States believe that such a war can be prevented. We do not believe that war is inevitable. One of the strongest reasons for this belief is our faith in the United Nations. The United Nations has three great roles to play in preventing wars. First, it provides a way for negotiation and the settlement of disputes among nations by peaceful means. Second, it provides a way of utilizing collective strength of member nations under the Charter to prevent aggression. Third, it provides a way through which, once the danger of aggression is reduced, the nations can be relieved of the burden of armaments. In any future case of aggression, the resolution on the United Action for Peace, which is now being considered by the General Assembly, recognizes three important principles. To maintain the peace, the United Nations must be able to learn the facts about any threat of aggression. Next, it must be able to call quickly upon the member nations to act if the threat becomes serious. Above all, the peace-loving nations must have the military strength available when called upon to act decisively to put down aggression. The peace-loving nations are building that strength. However much they may regret the necessity, they will continue to build up their strength until they have created forces strong enough to preserve the peace under the United Nations. They will do all that is required to provide a defense against aggression. They will do that because under the conditions which now exist in the world, it is the only way to maintain peace. We intend no easy road to peace. We have a solemn obligation to the peoples we represent to continue our combined efforts to achieve the strength that will prevent aggression. At the same time, we have an equally solemn obligation to continue our efforts to find solutions to the major problems and issues that divide the nations. The settlement of these differences would make possible a truly dependable and effective system for the reduction and control of armaments. That swords shall be beaten into plowshares, and that nations shall not learn war anymore. Then man can turn his great inventiveness, his tremendous energies, and the resources with which he has been blessed to creative efforts. Then we shall be able to realize the kind of world which has been the vision of man for centuries. This is the goal which we must keep before us, and the vision in which we must never lose faith. This will be our inspiration, and with God's help, we shall attain our goal.
I'm just going to get to read a few public service announcements. This is for the art theater here in Champaign, kind of listings for the these started playing yesterday, Friday. and these would be playing, these movies would be playing through July 5th, which is so through Thursday. Won't You Be My Neighbor, Fred Rogers, who may be best known as the soft-spoken, cardigan-wearing children's television host, in reality, his career represents a sustained attempt to present a coherent view about how we should best speak to children about important matters and how television could be used as a positive force in our society. And screening at 10 p.m. on Friday and Saturday nights is How to Talk to Girls at Parties, which is a sci-fi romantic comedy that concerns an alien touring the galaxy who meets two young inhabitants in a London suburb. And you have two more chances to see the documentary RBG, which focuses on the life and career of Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who I believe is, I'm just going to check, I believe she is 85. She was born on March 15th, 1933, and she was appointed by then President Bill Clinton, and took the oath of the Supreme Court in August 10th, 1993. Talking more about the Supreme Court, and for all up to date days and times for the art theater, you can go to www.theartheater.org. And just a reminder that the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, station management, the board of directors, or the WEFT Associates. And just, I'll do a little weather kind of update. As of right now, it's partly cloudy. It's about 92, high of about 92 degrees. It's going to essentially stay that way until about 6 p.m. tonight, and it'll get down maybe to the 80s. So yeah, it's going to be a very warm, hot day. So if you, I would advise you not, if you don't need to be outside, probably try to avoid being outside if possible, just because it's very, 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 very hot. I actually heard that a museum, this is like this all around the world, I heard somewhere in Scotland, a museum actually was partly melted because it was so, temperatures are so hot in around the world. And just to kind of continue with this weather update, tomorrow, Sunday, there is a chance of isolated thunderstorms, and again the temperature will be about high of 92 and low around 72, and again 30% chance of thunderstorms. Monday, 40% chance of scattered thunderstorms, the high of about 86, the low of about 71, and then keep going, I guess. Tuesday, about 50% chance of scattered thunderstorms, but that's quite a, that could change, obviously. And just in terms of what's going on in Illinois, in terms of local politics, self-proclaimed Nazi, his name is Arthur Jones, he's running in the, I believe, if I can get look at the news here, the article, He is running, and his name is Arthur Jones. He is a self-proclaimed Nazi. He denies that the Holocaust is happening. He is running for Congress, and I'm trying to find the exact race he is running in. I believe, I want to say it's the Illinois 3rd, Chicago. It's a Chicago area congressional district, and I believe it's the 3rd congressional district of Illinois, and now he has been renounced by the Illinois Republicans. Unfortunately, they did not run a candidate from there. They did not run a candidate because this is a race that usually Democrats win, so the Illinois Republicans didn't want to spend time or money on a candidate that they figured would just lose in the general election. So Mr. Arthur Jones, who again is a Holocaust denier, was able to somehow get enough signatures on the ballot, and he will be running against Democratic Dan Lipinski, who, again, a lot of people expect, the Democrats usually win this seat. And this has been getting quite a bit of attention nationally. In fact, Texas Senator Ted Cruz said that, told voters that Ted Cruz said the Republican, that he would rather vote for a Democrat than a Nazi. In fact, I'll read his tweet. This is Ted Cruz, Republican senator in Texas. He tweeted, "This is horrific, an avowed Nazi running for Congress. To the good people of Illinois, you have two reasonable choices, write in another candidate or vote for the Democrat. This bigoted fool should receive zero votes." And he is talking about Arthur Jones, who, of course. But, and yes, it's the 3rd congressional district. And so, and that's in Illinois, 3rd congressional district of Illinois. So, interesting, unfortunate, had, news for Illinois that's making national attention, but it's just that kind of political election year. Let's see, I had another, I believe this, July 2nd, so that's tomorrow, Monday, marks the, July 2nd, 1979 is when the Susan B. Anthony dollar was issued. It's the first United States coin to honor a woman, and this is a little audio or video clip on Susan B. Anthony, and I'll play that here for you and just... once I get it set up, okay.
Right to vote, 1873. This speech was delivered by Susan B. Anthony before court in defense of women's suffrage. She was arrested for casting an illegal vote in the presidential election of 1872. Friends and fellow citizens, I stand before you tonight under indictment for the alleged crime of having voted at the last presidential election without having a lawful right to vote. It shall be my work this evening to prove to you that in thus voting, I not only committed no crime, but instead simply exercised my citizens' rights guaranteed to me and all United States citizens by the National Constitution beyond the power of any state to deny. The preamble of the Federal Constitution says, "We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. It was we, the people, not we, the white male citizens, nor yet we, the male citizens, but we, the whole people, who formed the Union. And we formed it not to give the blessings of liberty, but to secure them. Not to the half of ourselves and the half of our posterity, but to the whole people, women as well as men. And it is a downright mockery to talk to women of their enjoyment of the blessings of liberty, while they are denied the use of the only means of securing them provided by this democratic republican government, the ballot. For any state to make sex a qualification that must ever result in the disfranchisement of one entire half of the people, is to pass a bill of attainder, or an ex post facto law, and is therefore a violation of the supreme law of the land. By it, the blessings of liberty are forever withheld from women, and their female posterity. To them, this government has no just powers derived from the consent of the governed. To them, this government is not a democracy. It is not a republic. It is an odious aristocracy, a hateful oligarchy of sex, the most hateful aristocracy ever established on the face of the globe. An oligarchy of wealth where the rich govern the poor. An oligarchy of learning where the educated govern the ignorant. Or even an oligarchy of race where the Saxon rules the African might be endured. But this oligarchy of sex, which makes father, brothers, husband, sons, the oligarchs over the mother and sisters, the wife and daughters of every household, which ordains all men sovereigns, all women subjects, carries dissension, discord, and rebellion into every home of the nation. Webster, Worcester, and Bouvier all define a citizen to be a person in the United States entitled to vote and hold office. The only question left to be settled now is, are women persons? And I hardly believe any of our opponents will have the hardihood to say that they are not. Being persons, then, women are citizens. And no state has a right to make any law or to enforce any old law that shall abridge their privileges or immunities. Hence, every discrimination against women in the constitutions and laws of the several states is today null and void, precisely as is every one against Negroes.
That was the, again, a speech by, I'm not sure who exactly read it, but that was on the YouTube channel Learn Out Loud, of Susan B. Anthony on the women's right to vote. Again, marking since July, figured I'd play that since July 2nd is the anniversary of the Susan B. Anthony coin. And now, just a reminder, if you, since it is in an election year, you can feel free to check whether or not you're registered, whether or not you are registered to vote. You can go to Google, just go to Google and type in Illinois registered to vote, and that should take you to the, I believe it's the state's website, OVA. You can go to it should take you to ova.elections.il.gov, and there should be a registration page. It's the state board, Illinois state board, the Illinois online voter registration application website. And again, to vote in Illinois, you must be a United States citizen. You must be at least 17 years old on or before the date of the, we already had our primary, so which was in March, but as long as you're 18 on or before the date of the general election, which in this midterm election will be, I believe, Tuesday, November 6th. You must live in your election precinct for at least 30 days prior to election day. You must not be serving a sentence of confinement in any penal institution as a result of a conviction. So like a federal, if you have any kind of federal charge, you know, convictions. And you can, of course, not claim the right to vote anywhere else. So if you're voting somewhere else, You can't vote here, so you can't vote twice, obviously. And of course, and again, that you can go to check to see if you're registered at OVA. That's OVA.elections.il.gov. And I think that will be it here for the world we live in. This is, you know, here on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, and you can stream us online at weft.org. And yeah, that will be it for the world we live in. Enjoy the rest of your day. Probably, I would advise you to stay inside where, and hopefully, you know, where it's, where, if you have air conditioning or just anywhere to stay cool, because it is very, very hot outside. It's like 92 degrees. I'm going to end this show with a song from the Diane Patterson's album Open Road, and this song is Eagle Feather, the track Eagle Feather. And again, enjoy the rest of your day. I'll see you next, or I'll be here next week. Thanks. Bye.
This is WEFT Champaign, 90.1 FM, community radio for East Central Illinois, streaming live at www.weft.org. The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and